Chapter 6. We found ourselves in a room with bare floor and walls. There was a rough table and a couple of stools in it, nothing else whatever. An old woman with her gray hair hanging loose wrung her hands when we appeared. A peal of loud laughter resounded through the empty house, very amazing and weird. At this the old woman tried to get past us. "Nobody to leave the room," apostrophe said General Robles to me. I swung the door to, heard the latch click, and the laughter became faint in our ears. Before another word could be spoken in that room I was amazed by hearing the sound of distant thunder. I had carried in with me into the house a vivid impression of a beautiful clear moonlight night, without a speck of cloud in the sky. I could not believe my ears. Sent early abroad for my education, I was not familiar with the most dreaded natural phenomenon of my native land. I saw, with inexpressible astonishment, a look of terror in my chief's eyes. Suddenly I felt giddy. The general staggered against me heavily. The girl seemed to reel in the middle of the room. The taper fell out of her hand and the light went out. A shrill cry of misericordia. ... from the old woman pierced my ears. In the pitchy darkness I heard the plaster off the walls falling on the floor. It is a mercy there was no ceiling. Holding onto the latch of the door, I heard the grinding of the roof tiles cease above my head. The shock was over. Out of the house. The door. "Fly, Santiera, fly!" ... howled the general. "You know, sinners, in our country the bravest are not ashamed of the fear an earthquake strikes into all the senses of man. One never gets used to it. Repeated experience only augments the mastery of that nameless terror. It was my first earthquake, and I was the calmest of them all. I understood that the crash outside was caused by the porch, with its wooden pillars and tiled roof projection, falling down. The next shock would destroy the house, maybe. That rumble as of thunder was approaching again. The general was rushing round the room, to find the door perhaps. He made a noise, as though he were trying to climb the walls, and I heard him distinctly invoke the names of several saints. "Out, out, Santiera!" ... he yelled. The girl's voice was the only one I did not hear. "General, ... I cried, I cannot move the door. We must be locked in." ... I did not recognize his voice in the shout of malediction and despair he let out. "Sinners, I know many men in my country, especially in the provinces most subject to earthquakes, who will neither eat, sleep, pray, nor even sit down to cards with closed doors. The danger is not in the loss of time, but in this, that the movement of the walls may prevent a door being opened at all." This was what had happened to us. We were trapped, and we had no help to expect from anybody. There is no man in my country who will go into a house when the earth trembles. There never was except one. Gasparuz. He had come out of whatever hole he had been hiding in outside, and had clambered over the timbers of the destroyed porch. Above the awful subterranean groan of coming destruction I heard a mighty voice shouting the word Arminia. ... with the lungs of a giant. An earthquake is a great leveler of distinctions. I collected all my resolution against the terror of the scene. "She is here, ... I shouted back. A roar as of a furious wild beast answered me, while my head swam, my heart sank, and the sweat of anguish streamed like rain off my brow. He had the strength to pick up one of the heavy posts of the porch. Holding it under his armpit like a lance, but with both hands, he charged madly the rocking house with the force of a battering ram, bursting open the door and rushing in, headlong, over our prostrate bodies. I and the general, picking ourselves up, bolted out together, without looking round once till we got across the road. Then, clinging to each other, we beheld the house change suddenly into a heap of formless rubbish behind the back of a man, who staggered towards us bearing the form of a woman clasped in his arms. Her long black hair hung nearly to his feet. He laid her down reverently on the heaving earth, and the moonlight shone on her closed eyes. Centers, we mounted with difficulty. Our horses getting up plunged madly, held by the soldiers who had come running from all sides. Nobody thought of catching Gasparus then. The eyes of men and animals shone with wild fear. My general approached Gasparus, who stood motionless as a statue above the girl. He let himself be shaken by the shoulder without detaching his eyes from her face. K-gape! Apostrophe apostrophe shouted the general in his ear. You are the bravest man living. You have saved my life. I am General Robles. Come to my quarters tomorrow, if God gives us the grace to see another day. Apostrophe apostrophe, he never stirred as if deaf, without feeling, insensible. We rode away for the town, full of our relations, of our friends, of whose fate we hardly dared to think. The soldiers ran by the side of our horses. Everything was forgotten in the immensity of the catastrophe overtaking a whole country. Gasparus saw the girl open her eyes. The raising of her eyelids seemed to recall him from a trance. They were alone. The cries of terror and distress from homeless people filled the plains of the coast remote and immense, coming like a whisper into their loneliness. She rose swiftly to her feet, darting fearful glances on all sides. What is it? She cried out low, and peering into his face. Where am I? He bowed his head sadly, without a word. Who are you? He knelt down slowly before her, and touched the hem of her coarse black beige skirt. Why, your slave, he said. She caught sight then of the heap of rubbish that had been the house, all misty in the cloud of dust. Ah, she cried, pressing her hand to her forehead. I carried you out from there, he whispered at her feet. And they? She asked in a great sob. He rose, and taking her by the arms, led her gently towards the shapeless ruin half overwhelmed by a landslide. See, come and listen, he said. The serene moon saw them clambering over that heap of stones, joists and tiles, which was a grave. They pressed their ears to the interstices, listening for the sound of a groan, for a sigh of pain. At last, he said, they died swiftly. You are alone. She sat down on a piece of broken timber and put one arm across her face. He waited, then approaching his lips to her ear colon, let us go, he whispered. Never, never from here, she cried out, flinging her arms above her head. He stooped over her, and her raised arms fell upon his shoulders. He lifted her up, steadied himself and began to walk, looking straight before him. What are you doing? She asked, feebly. I am escaping from my enemies, he said, never once glancing at his light burden. With me? She sighed, helplessly. Never without you, he said. Why, you are my strength. He pressed her close to him. His face was grave, and his footsteps steady. The conflagrations bursting out in the ruins of destroyed villages dotted the plain with red fires, and the sounds of distant lamentations, the cries of Misericordia, Misericordia, made a desolate murmur in his ears. He walked on, solemn and collected, as if carrying something holy, fragile, and precious. The earth rocked at times under his feet. Ix, with movements of mechanical care, and an air of abstraction, old General Santiero lighted a long and thick cigar. It was a good many hours before we could send a party back to the ravine, he said to his guests. We had found one third of the town laid low, the rest shaken up, and the inhabitants, rich and poor, reduced to the same state of distraction by the universal disaster. The affected cheerfulness of some contrasted with the despair of others. In the general confusion, a number of reckless thieves, without fear of God or man, became a danger to those who, from the downfall of their homes, had managed to save some valuables. Crying miser Icordia louder than any at every tremor, and beating their breast with one hand, these scoundrels robbed the poor victims with the other, not even stopping short of murder. General Robles' division was occupied entirely in guarding the destroyed quarters of the town from the depredations of these inhuman monsters. Taken up with my duties of orderly officer, it was only in the morning that I could assure myself of the safety of my own family. My mother and my sisters had escaped with their lives from that ballroom, where I had left them early in the evening. I remember those two beautiful young women, God rest their souls, as if I saw them this moment, in the garden of our destroyed house, pale but active, assisting some of our poor neighbors, in their soiled ball dresses, and with the dust of fallen walls on their hair. As to my mother, she had a stoical soul in her frail body. Half covered by a costly shawl, she was lying on a rustic seat by the side of an ornamental basin whose fountain had ceased to play forever on that night. I had hardly had time to embrace them all with transports of joy when my chief, coming along, dispatched me to the ravine with a few soldiers, to bring in my strong man, as he called him, and that pale girl. But there was no one for us to bring in. A landslide had covered the ruins of the house, and it was like a large mound of earth with only the ends of some timbers visible here and there, nothing more. Thus were the tribulations of the old royalist couple ended. An enormous and unconsecrated grave had swallowed them up alive, in their unhappy obstinacy against the will of a people to be free. And their daughter was gone. That Gaspar Ruse had carried her off I understood very well. But as the case was not foreseen, I had no instructions to pursue them. And certainly I had no desire to do so. I had grown mistrustful of my interference. It had never been successful, and had not even appeared creditable. He was gone. Well, let him go. And he had carried off the royalist girl. Nothing better. Vaya con Dios. This was not the time to bother about a deserter who, justly or unjustly, ought to have been dead, and a girl for whom it would have been better to have never been born. So I marched my men back to the town. After a few days, order having been re-established, all the principal families, including my own, left for Santiago. We had a fine house there. At the same time the division of Robles was moved to new cantonments near the capital. This change suited very well the state of my domestic and amorous feelings. One night, rather late, I was called to my chief. I found General Robles in his quarters, at ease, with his uniform off, drinking neat brandy out of a tumbler as a precaution, he used to say, against the sleeplessness induced by the bites of mosquitoes. He was a good soldier, and he taught me the art and practice of war. No doubt God has been merciful to his soul, for his motives were never other than patriotic, if his character was irascible. As to the use of mosquito nets, he considered it effeminate, shameful, unworthy of a soldier. I noticed at the first glance that his face, already very red, wore an expression of high good humor. Aha! Senor Tenient, apostrophe, he cried, loudly, as I saluted at the door. Behold! Your strong man has turned up again. Apostrophe, apostrophe, he extended to me a folded letter, which I saw, was superscribed to the Commander-in-Chief of the Republican Armies. Apostrophe, apostrophe, this, apostrophe, General Robles went on in his loud voice, was thrust by a boy into the hand of a sentry at the quartel general, while the fellow stood there thinking of his girl, no doubt for, before he could gather his wits together the boy had disappeared amongst the market people, and he protests he could not recognize him to save his life. Apostrophe, apostrophe, my chief told me further, that the soldier had given Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.